So welcome back, everyone, to Off the Couch with the Psych Guys. My name is Timothy Meyer, joined as always with Dr. Constantine Wilkin, the other psych guy. But today we have some guests joining us, which we're really excited about. So we have Dave from Next Level Physio, and we have Stephen Neer and Jessica Colucci, who are both psychotherapists here at the practice that me and Dr. Wilkin work at. So welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And today we're going to talk about something completely different. Usually we talk about just mental health. But today we're going to talk about the intersection between physical performance and mental health. And Dave Sear is going to talk a little bit more about his practice, what he sees when it comes to mental health and physical rehabilitation.
Yeah, so I'm Dr. David Kwan. I'm a physical therapist for over 15 years. And my specialty over the past 15 years has really been athletes and active adults. Athletes actually of all various ages. I've treated Olympians, I've treated professional athletes, I've treated high school, you know, super high level, Division I athletes of multiple sports. But I think the interplay of, you know, the mental and physical in terms of high level athletics and in terms of like the everyday weekend warrior, I've seen the gambit over the past 15 years, and a lot of it, especially when it comes to eating disorders and high-level athletics, instances like figure skating and, and dance and gymnastics, and also in terms of you know, the desire and the edge that high-level athletes are looking to gain, there's a big mental aspect of it as well. And we actually had you guys on our podcast talking about that exact same thing. So.
Right. Okay, cool. So, and I can imagine that if you're seeing an athlete who is struggling with some sort of a physical issue and there's rehabilitation that's taking place, as you've mentioned, mental health is going to be a part of it. And I'm wondering if there's a way that you decide to talk about these issues, or how do you present somebody that needs a little bit more mental health focus?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a different conversation for different populations. So if it's somebody that, this is usually the scenario that happens. Somebody comes into my clinic, has had chronic pain for years, has seen this specialist, this specialist, this specialist. No one has helped them. And they're really reaching out in desperation. Because I mean, like, we pride ourselves as being like the last physical therapist that you see. Because you know, we try, at least we hope to get the results that other therapists or other specialists might not have been able to achieve. So a lot of times we'll have those people with chronic pain issues, and it becomes very clear through the rehab process that it's not just a physical issue, that there's a large mental aspect to it. And I'm not a psychotherapist, I'm not a psychologist. It's not my lane. So I do need to have that conversation with them sometimes. It's a very delicate and very personal conversation you have to have. And we hope that through the process of rehab, we develop a rapport and a sense of trust with the patient that we are looking out for their best interests. And we are not just like trying to get rid of them as a patient or whatever, that we do care about, you know, their outcomes, and we care about them getting their life back. So, you know, I've had conversations with patients like, listen, there is something clearly here that isn't just physical, right? And my purview, my world is the physical world. And it would probably behoove you, and I believe that the missing piece of what we're working on is a mental aspect. So I really think that you should talk to somebody about some of these issues that you're having, and because I think they're having a physical manifestation, whereas it's not all physical. And you know, I've had patients be like, not take that conversation well.
I would imagine.
I've had patients also receive it well, because a lot of them are desperate at that point, where they're just not getting better. They're not getting to where they want to be. And I think they even know it in the back of their mind, where they understand that there's something here that isn't right. And it's not just the physical.
And I think to your point, it's some people probably know it, but for you as a professional to acknowledge it, to take the time to talk about it, I think really kind of brings it into focus.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, Jessica, that's kind of where you pick up, right? Mm-hmm. If somebody is seeing David at his clinic and then decides to maybe I need to address a mental health concern, it's probably somebody that you would see.
Yeah, and I love the idea of working with a team, especially around eating disorders. I've heard before that some people have said that they were working with a therapist and maybe the topic of an eating disorder got brought up and the therapist was like, before we pull anybody else in, let's try to handle it. And I feel very opposite of that. Mm-hmm. I think we need a team, especially with an eating disorder. It's so anxiety-based, that's really the root of it. And when we know as mental health clinicians about anxiety is this lack of control or the perception of lack of control. And so the mental health piece would be coming in and working on how are we alleviating the anxiety? How are we working on taking that control back in a way that isn't an eating disorder or controlling the food that they're taking in or letting out? So to have a team around of, okay, we're going to work with your mental side of things. We're going to work with the physical side of things. We're going to have a nutritionist working with you to really break down what your meal should be looking like. What's the input coming in so that when your output is of what you're exercising, there isn't a calorie deficit to where you're really harming yourself. Mm-hmm. There are ways to get that control back so we can do it from the mental side of really breaking down that anxiety too, to feel better about taking food in a healthy way and exercising in a healthy way.
Yeah, nutrition is a big aspect of what we talk about in terms of physical therapy, but we talk about it in a way that like, here are all the variables that we're trying to control, right? Mm-hmm. I could control your range of motion, we could control your strength, we can, you know, figure out, you know, what are some patternings that are happening in like your daily life that are leading to overstress or chronic overuse issues. But we talk about nutrition, sleep, mm-hmm. and then mental health as like the other variables that I can't control. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a physical therapist that says, oh, let's try to control this in-house mm-hmm. is incredibly irresponsible because I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm not a mental health expert, mm-hmm. nor am I a nutritionist. I can, you know, make suggestions about like, you know, generally speaking, like you should drink this amount of water and like you should mm-hmm. have this amount of protein and like maybe not binge drink every day. Right. So I think that in terms of general, like overall health, nutritional suggestions, like I could do that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to mental health, like that's not my lane at all. Like we as healthcare professionals, as physical therapists, or even as like primary care physicians, like that's not our lane and we need to learn to stay in our lane.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting to me before we jumped on the podcast, we talked a little bit about how from a physical standpoint, you guys can help with eating disorders and to help clients learn how to exercise more effectively, sort of not to trigger the eating disorders. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so one of the unique things that we do at our clinic is we also work with kind of out of happenstance. Our clinic also works in the fitness realm. Like, so we have fitness clients and we do personal training and things of that nature. But upon happenstance, we were able to kind of tap into this population of individuals with eating disorders, and they're mostly teens, mostly teenage girls. Mm-hmm. And we work with them in terms of learning how to exercise in a healthy way. And we do that through monitoring their heart rate, through talking about RPE, or rate of perceived exertion, choosing specific exercises or specific modes of exercise mm-hmm. that are trying to not trigger issues when it comes to exercise anorexia or other issues in relation to like eating disorders. Mm-hmm. So we have to work very closely also with their nutritionists. Like I said, we're not nutritionists, right. But really helping the kids learn how to exercise well mm-hmm. in a way that's going to help them physically and help their fitness without having the negative results of connecting exercise with weight loss and body dysmorphia or other issues.
Right. No, for sure. That to me, it's such an important and delicate balance to your point, because there's so many things have been taken into account when we talk about eating disorder. And Stephen, I know that you really like to focus on some of the nutritional elements to it and how you see patients in your own practice and seeing how important that might be. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's something that I think people aren't as aware of in terms of how it influences their mental health, but, you know, speaking to you, Dave, and, you know, the athletes that you work with, the patients that you work with, and how it can also relate to their recovery as well. I mean, physical and mental, obviously nutrition plays, you know, such a huge role. So I really just try and increase awareness, get people to understand what they're eating and how that's influencing their mood, how that's influencing, you know, their inflammation, you know, or do they feel more achy the next day? We talk about alcohol when it comes down to that. So I'm actually interested to hear from you, Dave, a little bit. Like, is that a conversation that you have as well with the people that you work with, talking about alcohol or, you know, just kind of checking in with how foods influence them in their recovery?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a detective a lot of times, where somebody comes in and they're like, oh, like, I feel like my back was really, really bothering me. So I'm just like, take me through the past couple days. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, you know, I didn't really do much. I was like sitting on the couch a lot, watching football. You know, I went out to the bar and like I had like a bunch of drinks or blah, blah. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, there's a connection there.
You heard that, right?
They didn't connect it.
Yeah.
Right. They didn't connect the fact that, you know, sitting on the couch all day and also maybe like binge drinking is going to lead to some sort of physical manifestation, whether it's, you know, physical inflammatory or maybe there's some other like emotional triggers related to, you know, whatever happened. Maybe their fantasy football team's doing terrible and, you know, they're stressed out over, you know, their gambling debt. But I mean, I don't dive into that,
right.
But mentally I make a little checklist like, hey, maybe there's a relation to their physical manifestation and whatever their activity was, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times people think like, oh, I didn't do much. Like I just sat around all day. Like that's actually part of it.
Right.
Whereas maybe if you got up and exercised, you went for a walk or you went for a run or you did something more physical, they would actually feel better in terms of like their back wasn't hurting as much.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much I could, you know, go down with this, but there's this fine line I feel like with, you know, also talking about, you know, dialing your nutrition as well, because some people can take it way far in the other direction and just completely stress out over every single minute detail. And then that increases stress, which we know has a lot of negative health effects as well, and can play on your mind a little bit when it comes to your recovery or anything along those
absolutely.
Lines.
I mean, so for example, I used to work in a place that it was an ice skating rink, mm-hmm. and I worked with a lot of young female athletes that were figure skaters. Mm-hmm. Ice dance, figure skating, synchro is like mm-hmm. a big group of, you know, individuals doing a synchronized figure skating routine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's this weird interplay in especially that world where food becomes the enemy, mm-hmm. where food is like, if I eat this apple, mm-hmm. I'm going to get fat. And then I'm not going to be able to skate because I'm going to feel heavy. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to hit my jumps. And it is, the figure skating world is interesting because it's like fractions of an inch makes a huge difference. It's whether or not you land your jump or if you're on your ass. Mm-hmm. So for them, mentally, they connect food with something negative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not understanding that they need food in order to, one, heal from their injuries, but two, also heal from their exercise
yeah.
and improve their performance. Mm-hmm. So I've had kids like come into my clinic area and hide underneath the window so their coach can't see them eating.
Oh.
And like I'm sitting there like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And they would be like peeking over and be like, oh shoot. Like, and they're like eating their lunch because their coach would yell at them if they were eating.
Wow.
It really becomes a weird place where you're just like the only advocate for your, not that that wasn't everyone. Everyone in terms of figure skating, that wasn't the norm.
Right.
There's, you know, specific incidences, but sports like figure skating in particular lend itself to this negative reinforcement of in relationship between food and performance. Whereas actually like, you know, people in the sports world mm-hmm. And especially high performance, you need food as fuel,
And there should be a positive relationship to it. You know, they shouldn't be like, you know, downing Rocky Road. Right. But in terms of like performance, the disconnect between the positive relationship with the food and performance is really quite large.
Yeah. Sorry, you're just going to say.
Sorry, I was just going to jump in. So just thinking about the holistic approach that we're taking too with people who we're working with, you know, we can have our therapists, physical therapists, nutritionists, just bringing up coaches, how important the coach plays a role in how the athletes are thinking about themselves and their performances, what kind of messages are they getting taken down to them. And just hearing that made me think even on my diet. So Northeastern swimming and diving, you know, swimming and diving is always together for college sports. Mm-hmm. The divers, a lot of them were former gymnasts or they were diving from a young age. So that is very prevalent already as well in the gymnastics community, the diving community. And it was a known thing, a coach who's not there anymore, but he actually said at the beginning of a season, I'm going to see how many eating disorders I can get out of my girls this year.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, this was the thing that was kind of getting trickled down. And it's like, okay, this is what you're hearing from your coach. What is that making the athletes feel like when they have to go and eat during a really long meet where you have all this time and you should be eating to refuel before you're going in for your next event? Are you actually eating what you're supposed to? Are you taking in the proper nutrition so that you can recover to then do well in what's coming up next? Mm-hmm. And how hard that messaging can be. And that's why, you know, this whole holistic approach of really needing so many people giving the same messaging and positive messaging, hopefully we can do some good of get, you know, pushing out what can you be saying to your athletes to make them feel good and perform better. That doesn't sound like that.
Right.
You
know? Right. No, it just sounds such a razor sharp balance in a way, bringing everything into it. I don't necessarily think it's overwhelming, can't be done. It's just something to be aware of. And I think one of the reasons why we're here is to bring awareness to this idea, to make sure that the listeners are just aware that if you're struggling with something like that, you're not alone. You're not alone. And hopefully, as you can hear from these conversations, it's sometimes more common than one would think. Mm-hmm. And I know, Dave, you were mentioning before that you also work with chronic pain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it sounds like we're talking a lot about like high-level athletics, people that have like coaches and nutritionists, and a lot of this stuff also plays into like everyday adults, like everyday, you know, someone that wants to do a marathon or like someone that's just running 5Ks or a CrossFitter or whatever. excuse me. The interplay between the physical and mental is like an every person issue. And we talked about, we talked about mental health, but, you know, in this world of social media and comparison and this whole push towards like physical wellness, you know, I feel like there's a big lack of emphasis on mental health. Like, you know, things that go into it physically in terms of, you know, your nutrition and what kind of workouts are you doing, and you know, how much can you lift, and people don't focus on the mental aspect of it, and that mental aspect ties into the chronic pain.
For sure.
Like people that have been in pain for years or have issues with, mental health, they're often the same people, right? Whereas, you know, we talked about that scenario with the individual that's had chronic pain, and I have to have a conversation with them about, you know, seeking out maybe some mental health. That's not a frequent occurrence, but maybe it should be a little more frequent than it than it happens, because there's definitely, I mean, even research shows like if you don't believe that you're going to get better and you're afraid of pain, what we call fear avoidance, your outcomes are going to be much worse. Right. And if it probably happens in the mental,
For sure. You know, I really like
world too.
The point that you're making about social media, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing that came to mind when people put up pictures, right? You have the picture of this perfect individual. You don't have the mental health struggles that are also mentioned to how what needed to be compromised in order to get there. And I know, Stephen, that's a big thing for you, where you try to make sure that there's a balance, right? And how to get the peak performance when you're really balancing physical with mental health.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the big thing that I was just thinking of is, you know, a lot of common attitudes that I'll see when people come in, you know, as athletes, right, mm-hmm. things they might say to themselves. And we actually talked about this quite a bit on your podcast, just the, you know, the self-talk essentially that goes on, and, you know, trying to figure out how accurate we can make that self-talk to help yourself be able to, you know, move along and be in the moment, everything along those lines. But, you know, also there are these certain attitudes I would have to imagine that parallel themselves between people that are coming in to overcome this chronic pain, people that are coming in for mental health needs as well, you know, depression, anxiety. It, on some level, I'm sure for a lot of patients, feels as though it's this chronic thing that they're enduring. So the attitudes probably connect, I think, on some level. And I'm curious, you know, are there some attitudes that you see that are common amongst maybe patients that tend to get better versus those that maybe continue to struggle and endure a little bit? I imagine they're pretty tied closely.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that people that do well in physical therapy or do well in terms of like their overall health journey, they understand that it's a process, that it's not, physical therapy is by no means instant gratification, right? Like that's why people like the chiropractor videos, because they're like crack, crack, oh my God, I could, you know, move my neck. And you know, whether or not that's based in reality or not, you know.
It's a different podcast.
It's a different, different podcast. But physical therapy or like the fitness world is not an instant gratification thing. And our society is an instant gratification society, right? So it's a process. Like, it's work, and it's gonna take time, right? And I try to give a timeline in terms of my patients, like, hey, it's easier for like an ACL, because there's like, you know, very defined protocols and times and dates for progress. But, you know, somebody has like chronic pain or someone that has, you know, like some overuse issues, I try to give them timeline, like, hey, in a couple weeks, like we should feel this amount better. But if we don't, then we're gonna reassess and try to figure out what's going on. Right? So people that do well, one, they understand it's a process and it's going to take time. Two, patients that do well are usually those that are willing to put in the work. And they're asking the questions like, what can I do at home? Like, can I have videos? Can I have exercises? What should I avoid? What should I do? Can I go for a run? Can I not? Like, really looking for direction in terms of what they're allowed to do, what they can't do. And people that don't believe, or people that come in and just like passively want to get like heal me, you know, just fix me.
True for us as well.
I was just about to say, I'm sure that's the whole time you're talking, I'm like, it's like the same thing here in our world.
It's like, I'm not a mechanic. Like, it's not a passive thing. Like, it's a very active thing, and it's called rehab for a reason, right? Like, I'm called a therapist for a reason, because it's a partnership in terms of the patient and the client, or the patient and the therapist, to work together to reach their end goal. And it's going to take work on their part, it's going to take work on my part, but we have an understanding that it's a partnership.
Would you say that because it sounds like the thing that's coming to my mind is that an individual that wants to get better, both from mental health point of view or physical point of view, they have this goal in mind, I want to be here.
Yes.
And then there are using us, be it from a mental health, physical standpoint, as a tool to get to a particular place. It sounds like that type of an individual would really benefit from be it seeing one of us or seeing somebody or having this complementary sort of approach, because that's what I'm hearing. Because if you're right, if the individual comes in and says like, well, you just have to do this and I'll lay here for half hour, an hour, or come to our sessions and say like, well, I don't know, but like you have to fix me.
Yeah.
That's going to be challenging.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Gonna be challenging.
And I think that's where the interplay comes in. Like there has to be a partnership in terms of their physical, but there has to be a partnership in terms of their mental. And you know, that brings me to the next point of like, another person that does well is somebody that believes that they're gonna do well. Somebody that really understands that there's a connection between the work that they're putting in and their outcome, right? Just like you said, like they wanna be here, they believe that they could get there, they just need our help to get there.
Yeah, for sure. Any thoughts that are coming out from you, Tim?
Yeah. So I think that that's so important. And so there's one study that I read of a long time ago, and I don't remember the author or anything like that. But what they did was they surveyed cancer patients with the same type of cancer and the same prognosis and all of that sort of stuff. And they assessed like levels of hope and optimism. Mm-hmm. And the folks who were more hopeful and optimistic had longer,
recovery, right?
No, short. They lived longer, or they recovered, compared to the other group with more pessimistic or hopeless beliefs about their situation. Mm-hmm. So I love that study because that's a variable that we can look at here, and like we can touch on in therapy big time is beliefs and outcomes and all of that sort of stuff. And so I think that really what we're talking about here is the same thing, right? If there's that belief and there's that hope and that optimism that people can do it, then they probably will. And we could talk about self-fulfilling prophecies. And I won't even go into that. But I think that that's so huge. And then even going back to some of the previous things that you guys said, it could be in such a completely opposite place for some people and some athletes. I'm just picturing someone who's really optimistic going into physical therapy about their chronic pain or therapy, and then I'm thinking about other instances that you guys shared, and it's just the complete opposite. And I think that that's where therapy can do such a good job of kind of like unpacking all of that and understanding it. Mm-hmm. And if that piece isn't there, then people might be working in just the complete wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that when it comes to so we don't just do chronic pain and in terms of like short-term injuries, right? Somebody that has like a sprained ankle or whatever. A lot of this has like a smaller role to play, like whether or not they're going to believe that they get better or, the hard work that goes into it. But even in those instances, understanding in a partnership of hard work and like a non-linear progression in terms of recovery, I'm sure you guys experience the same thing. Like, you don't start at A and then get to level 10 or level 1 and then get to level 10, like in a straight line. Like, I call it like the stock market, right? You have a couple losses on, the first day and then you make your way up. But as long as the progression is up, that's the kind of illustration I like to use with my patient. I'm sure you guys experience the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's shifting that mindset from going from negative to positive and being able to work on gratitude, doing very measurable things to get towards that positive mindset. And a lot of people feel very stuck and they say, I can't do it. I can't get there. It's not possible. Again, self-fulfilling prophecy. If you give all the cans, and you're going to be, you might not be able to get there. But the more that you do shift, we know that the brain is like a muscle, and it's like if you're going to be curling all day with one arm and not curling with the other arm, one's going to get really strong and one's going to be really weak. And that happens with our negative brain so easily. Your negative brain wants to eat that up like candy. But the more that you feed the positive, the stronger it will get, and it will starts to seep in. And people can change their mindset and really have control over what they're doing, even when they think that they don't.
For sure. Is there, and this is to anybody, do you feel like there's a bridge that you guys use, be it in physical therapy or in mental health treatment, where you go from that sort of negative, I'm stuck, I'll never get back to the same level of performance as I did before? Anything, and maybe it's more for you guys, anything that you're seeing that you can use that's measurable that people can benefit from?
I really think psych education is really helpful there. And the way that I explain it is your attitudes and beliefs connecting to a cognitive behavior therapy framework here are so connected to your behaviors. So if you feel like you can't do it, then you probably won't try. And if you won't try, I promise you, you're not going to get better. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is, right? But if you feel like you can, you're more likely to do. So just to introduce that connection, make it very black and white, honestly, in that capacity, sometimes you'll see someone go a little, okay, well, at the very least, I need to do these things. And the way I explain it too is I use metaphors. I love my metaphors all the time. I use a nutritional metaphor. I go, hey, look, like, you wanna get healthy? Can you eat healthy one meal and then expect to be great and be perfectly healthy and have this clean bill of health? No, you have to do it time and again, consistently, months at a time, and then you'll see change, right? And if you're looking from a physique standpoint too, right? Like, you're not going to see any sort of change until there is that consistent behavior. And it works quite similarly when it comes to mental health, and it works quite similarly, I'm sure, when it comes to physical health too.
We do something called we call it the next Netflix preview. So it's like previously on physical therapy, you know, you were here, like you weren't able to do that, like you weren't able to squat, right? Fast forward to now, you may not think in your mind that you're any better, but look, you're able to squat like 120 pounds now. Like, it's a lot easier, I think, in my world than in your world to kind of connect the dots in terms of outcomes. Like, oh, look, you were a 4 out of 5 strength before, now you're a 5 out of 5. Like, you were not able to run like 10 steps, now you're able to run like 1 mile. Where it happens a lot. I have to remind patients a ton, like, they'll be like, oh, you know, I don't really feel like I'm getting anywhere, or I feel like we're not really improving. And one, it's like, it's been a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear this all the time.
Right. Let's give it a little bit more time.
Yeah.
But then it's also like, you know, this is where we were, this is where we are now. And, you know, obviously that's a change. And, you know, we just have to remind them of that.
Right. And I know, Dave, you mentioned something about alcohol. And I know, Steve, you had a really interesting story about how high-level performance and alcohol has a, you know, definitely has an interplay.
Sure. So I compete regularly in CrossFit, and it's very commonplace for, you know, after a competition, people want to get together and celebrate. This happens on the triathlon level as well. I did one and I experienced this as well. Like, it's just, you know, and it's a social bonding thing. Don't get me wrong. There's a need for it on some level. But particularly if you are dealing with some issues with your joints and, you know, you just attended something like this, it's, you know, you can drink. You can have some alcoholic beverages, and then the next day your body is just completely wrecked. So to me, it's just so plain. Yet sure, from the athletic endeavors that you just endured, there's going to be a little bit more of a beating that your body took, but you're not doing yourself any favors by, you know, consuming alcohol. And, you know, I think there are a lot of things to look at when it comes to that from the mental health standpoint, as well as from the physical side when it comes to recovery. I mean, we talk about substance use in, you know, our practice, and, you know, it's a coping mechanism. It's a way that they deal with the pain that they're experiencing on, you know, on some level. So, you know, I just think that, you know, it's funny to see these like very common, I guess, like cultural and, you know, norms that come into play from these different events and whatnot. And I think, you know, again, in moderation, if you're doing it every now and then in a social way, it's, you know, it's beneficial. But, you know, when it comes to your recovery, if you're, you know, going out and doing a triathlon and then you're, you know, having 6 beers, like,
well, that's interesting.
That's not gonna do your hips any favors.
Right. That's so interesting that you bring it up, because again, to me, it goes down to attitude, right? You do something that's so physically demanding, right?
Yeah.
And potentially you'd be in pain or you sprain something. It's so easy to go to alcohol, say, oh, everyone's going, sure, I'll have a, right? Like, it's just like numbs it out completely. So it makes it more likely that you'll do it, but maybe changing the attitude, seeing in terms of exactly what needs to be done in order for you to heal appropriately, might change some options out there for people.
And or a wild idea, you could go and not drink.
Right, that's that's another one for sure.
I think people, they sort of think like, oh, I just did this really hard thing that's good for me.
Yeah. And then
so I could do something that's not so good for me, and that will even out.
Like beers.
Right. But that's not the case, right? Because when you know, work really hard and your body needs to recover, right? And then you don't recover and you pour poison in your body. It's like it's just double bad. So it's not like, oh, I worked so hard, I deserve this. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. Like, give your body what it needs, which is like good nutrition and rest and recovery and stretching and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a huge dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, people really think like, oh, I kind of deserve this after this hard work I did.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes with like any, like, you know, people, you know, go for a run and then like have a pint of ice cream. You know, it's that, you know, reward issue that we as a society have. Like, we're talking about like instant gratification, and, you know, they perceive this as being their gratification. But yeah, I think, like, you know, in terms of substance use and in terms of, you know, the kind of culture that we live in, that's kind of centered around like hedonistic, you know, endeavors. Really having a more balanced view of like what is health. Like, we're doing people do a triathlon because they want to be healthy, right? They want to be fit. But you know, that's what at least the perception is. But maybe if we peel back the layers, like, they're doing that triathlon for reasons outside of health. And it maybe has to do with, like, you know, their feelings of self-worth or their competitive desire, then you need to be competitive. And the alcohol at the end, which in their mind is a reward, is actually just another thing that they're using to cope with some other mental health issues. Like, okay, again, I'm not a mental health expert.
No, that makes a lot of sense. A lot of the times, that's exactly what people do.
Yeah. And in terms of, like, in physical health, and, you know, we train people, we do personal training, things of that nature. We have to kind of peel back the layers of, like, what is the motivation behind your desire to get fit? Is it because you want to, you know, see your grandkids? Like, you want to walk your daughter down the aisle? Like, that's probably a better motivation than, like, oh, I just want to look jacked. And, like, what are some things those people are probably going to do not as well as the other people that have maybe better motivation. So just the interplay between, like, you know, even when it comes to mental health and, like, physical fitness, like, there's a lot to unpack there.
I mean, I was just thinking of balance too, and we talked about that this as well on your podcast about the importance of, you know, when we're looking at mental health, I think we're looking at a picture of balance. And I think when we're looking at physical health as well, you know, that triathlete or that person who's competing, like, there's not so much balance, and therefore there needs to be some more maintenance work in terms of their body to be able to endure these types of things. So, you know, there certainly is this kind of balance skew that happens as well when we talk about that sort of compensation for, you know, our feelings.
Yeah, like, in our world, we talk about it at Next Level a lot about resiliency and capacity, right? Is your body resilient enough to tolerate this level of activity? And if not, we need to raise your capacity in order to raise your resiliency. And a lot of other things comes into, like, something called variability, where it's like your available ranges of motion. Capacity is like how much can your tissues handle. And a lot goes into that, like nutrition and, you know, like morphology and anatomy. But it all goes into, like, how resilient are you? How much capacity do you have? And it would seem like mentally, like, some people have lower capacities to tolerate certain amount of stress or anxiety. And, like, how do you guys work on that?
Well, we have an evidence-based treatment called dialectical behavior therapy, which really one of the modules is specifically designed to help people increase their ability to tolerate the stress.
Oh, interesting.
So there's many different ways that we as providers, as clinicians, work to help you guys make sure that the individual is able to tolerate a lot more distress than originally when they're walking in through your door or through our doors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for coming. Thank you, David, Jessica, Steven, Tim, as always. And this is just a conversation to invite you guys to consider if you are an athlete or just a regular person thinking about or struggling with something, consider that a balance of physical health, mental health, and nutrition plays an enormous role in whether you're going to reach your goals. Thanks so much for joining, and I'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.